Well, good middle of the night to you. It's one of those times when it seems better to do a program than to sleep. So we're continuing now with program number 19. And we're working pretty much on the beginning of the book, Letters on Occult Meditation, which we notice has many musical references in it. So let's see what we have here. Yeah, okay. Just trying to get all this in order. So what have we been doing up to this point? We've been looking at 14 groups that will develop in the future, not immediately. I think there are signs, there are seeds for this kind of group development, but it will mature or even emerge and then mature when the Great Lord is again visibly walking the earth and is understood to be with us by those who recognize him. So now we go on, program 19, June 23rd, 1920. 100 years ago and a month and a half. And DK tells us, you are right in thinking that conditions today are not desirable. The whole world speeds towards a crisis reconstructive, you know, the Geminian forces of reconstruction, even though it seems to the onlooker to be destructive. Well, you have to wonder whether the hierarchy foresaw the possibility of the continuance of the First World War. This was, what should we say, about a year and a half after the armistice. But it was an armistice and not a real peace. On all sides, the tearing down of the old forms is progressing, nor is the work as yet fully accomplished. So the destructive power of the first ray was still at work, as really proven in the second part of the war. Enough has nevertheless been done to permit of the erection of the scaffolding for the new building in serenity and steady adherence to the next duty will come the simplification of that which must be done. Funny how we discover those typos in the CD-ROM, really a tremendous task and has facilitated the work of students of esotericism so much. Today, we deal with the effect of the word on the various centers on each body. Interesting, the preposition there, on each body, rather than within, and its utility in aligning the bodies with the causal vehicle. And this was our fourth point. Maybe he'll review that and spare us from having to go back and check it out. The first two are closely allied, for the sacred word, when enunciated, properly enunciated, brings acts on the various bodies through the medium of the centers and their astral and mental counterparts. some of the effects, such as the elimination of undesirable matter and the building in of new, the protective effect of the word and its work of stabilization and purification we have somewhat touched upon. And we will now focus our attention largely upon the centers and the result upon them of the sounding of the sacred word. Maybe the preposition on is quite useful because in a way, what did you say, some 3 inches behind the spinal cord, these centers can be found and maybe not so much within the dense physical body itself. So we have covered certain factors regarding the sounding of the word, the individual effect, the group effect, and let's see if we can there are a number of the group use of the word, right? The individual use of the word, yes. And the strong current set up between the disciple and the master and the creation of a vacuum and a linking with other egoic groups. All this is part of the correct use and effect on the physical vehicles of the lower group. And intensification of the vibration of the emotional bodies. And this I should have made bigger. The driving out of counter vibration and swinging all into a higher rhythm. Equilibrium, yes. Devas attracted, the protective shell, the work of evolution, all of this has been important. And under the law of attraction and repulsion, interestingly, the creation of geometrical forms, which have to be studied, and the proper configuration of the group constituents, some sent to the groups which are more suited to them and others brought in. We think about what Master DK had to go through when he was building his group in the 1920s, bringing people in, choosing them, oftentimes, but not always, from the students of the Arcane School who were magnetically brought together when Alice Bailey sounded the note. And then following this, the groups for specific purposes, using the word for certain calculated ends, and that enhances those specific purposes that we have studied. And here I'm going to emphasize this. And now we're into the chakras. Into the chakras and their effects on the bodies. There's some crisscross going on here. So individual work, group work with the word, the use of the word for helping to create and sustain and render effective certain of the groups that are anticipated for the future. And now, the word, the effect of the word on the various centers. and its utility in aligning the bodies with the causal vehicle. And this will be considered the fourth point. Sometimes it's hard to keep up with Master DK's outlining. Okay, this is point four. Following upon the individual use of the word, the group use of the word, and the use of the word for a specific group purposes to create, to empower the groups of the future. All right, then I think that should be pretty clear. It's hard to remember all these things, but right memory of what we read is necessary, in fact. And then we can say we've really gotten something out of the book, and we can have it reference ready, as it were, in our minds to apply when we run into a situation where application is indicated as necessary. So this is about the seven centers and the sacred word. And again, I'll put down basically, this is, point four. As is our custom, let us divide our thoughts under the following heads. Tabulation has its value. It systematizes knowledge, thus tending to the orderly arrangement of the mental body. Remember, the hierarchy is called the Society of Organized and Illumined Minds. So DK is giving us some teaching here on how to organize the mind. Tabulation has its value. It systematizes knowledge, thus tending to the orderly arrangement of the mental body. It facilitates recollection through the assistance of the eye. I think we'll just make a little note of that. The value of tabulation. So, what are these subjects? What are the divisions? Number one, enumeration and discussion of the centers. Number two, growth and development of the centers. Number three, the effect of meditation on the centers. Number four, their interrelation in the work of alignment. So this, all these subjects will be taken up, no doubt, systematically. And then when we go to think about what has been delivered in this book, it will be easier of access. Just reading again, the enumeration and discussion of the centers. Number two, the growth and development of the centers. Number three, the effect of meditation on the centers. And number four, their interrelation in the work of alignment, and that factor of interrelation is something often, forgotten. But the centers are organized in duads and triads, and maybe in other configurations. And he gives us, well, he does give us many triangles that connect them, and according to which triangle may be standing out in the development of the etheric body, we will know and understand general status of the individual concerned, developmental status. First, let me say that certain information that may seem to be the natural sequence and corollary of that which I have to impart will have to be withheld. Okay. You'll explain why this is so. And it's usually, to guard the student against premature use, running into material that seems tantalizing, so often invites the attempt to use the material prematurely and without proper supervision. That supervision will come for us when the masters are again visibly walking the earth, or visible on the lowest planes. The danger involved through the injudicious development of the centers are too great for us to venture yet to give full and detailed instructions. I mean, pretty much you expect that to be done privately and with the person concerned, and not with a book for publication. We seek to develop masters of compassion, dispensers of the love of the universe. We seek not to develop masters of black arts and specialists in ruthless self-expression at the expense of the uninitiated. Whoa. What a statement that is regarding the dangers of premature revelation of the natural corollaries to what has been said so far. That is an amazing little section. And really, I think, spells out the dangers. We seek to develop masters of compassion. Well, we have masters of wisdom, lords of compassion, and here he has brought the two together. Dispensers of the love of the universe, especially, in this solar system, which is a love, wisdom, solar system. We seek not to develop masters of black arts. They do exist. And this is an amazing statement. And specialists in ruthless self-expression at the expense of the uninitiated, at the expense of those who cannot protect themselves, who know far less, and who become victims of those who can easily overpower them. Because as I say, when methods are given, the human tendency is to use them, whether or not it is wise and advisable to use them. Certain facts have been and can be imparted. They will lead to the development of the intuition and inspire the seeker after light to more earnest endeavor. So though the wisdom of Master DK is really coming out here, because he knows he can see far ahead about how misuse would arise. Other facts must be withheld, for they would be weapons of great danger in the hands of the unscrupulous, and of course it would be easy for the unscrupulous to get hold of them in a published form if they were simply available, you know, in a book. If then it seems to you that I have but imparted only sufficient to arouse interest, know then that that is my aim. Okay, so he spells out the limitations of what he intends to do. When your interest and the interest of all aspirants is sufficiently aroused, naught can be withheld from you. So making then sacrifices for the acquisition of those spiritual methods, which are interest. Now, you know, even those upon the left-hand path, they do train, as everybody else does, up to the second initiation. But after that, a choice is made whether one accepts, let's say, the devil of the unregulated, ambitious personality, or whether one still adheres to the will of God and takes the Syrian method of progress, which is filled with the Christ energy of sacrifice. Okay, so here is the enumeration of the centers. I think in so many places we find this, but every place where they are mentioned a little bit more, or something from slightly different angle, is brought in. So the physical centers are, as you know, and when he says physical, he means etheric physical, because the ethers are a more refined type of physical matter force. So the base of the spine, the solar plexus, the spleen, which is it's a secondary center, but then he seems to be mixing them, and we don't have yet the sacral center mentioned, even though he will mention it, and I think he'll talk about the need of overcoming. It is definitely associated with the generation of physical bodies. So the base of the spine, the solar plexus, leaving out for the moment the sacral center, the spleen, I think Leadbeater did this too, left out the sacral center, the heart, the throat, the pineal gland, which is physical, but it's the, as we know, the precipitation of the Ajna center. Oh, excuse me, the precipitation of the head center. And the pituitary body, yes, the precipitation of the Ajna center. And you might wonder, you know, why, since he seems to be moving from bottom to top, does he place the pituitary body after the pineal gland? And let's just call these the physical precipitation, so we can be clear. He's not talking about the ether in these two instances. But maybe it's because, you know, the rising kundalini has to reach the head and then come around and down to be properly projected. And so the Ajna center, whose precipitation is the pituitary body, will be involved in that that finality, that projection and direction. Directive qualities come from the Ajna center. This enumeration is correct, but I seek to give you another division based upon earlier imparted facts. Those anent the solar system. All right, so there's a little bit let's see what he says further, because obviously he's giving us yet another point of view. We find many points of view in the kind of index, or let's say collection of tabulations in the back of Esoteric Psychology 1, and some surprising tabulations if we have been adhering to only one particular tabulation, thinking that that's it. So this enumeration is correct, but I seek to give you another division based on earlier imparted facts, those and then the solar system. So let's see if what he has just given us is that, or he's talking about what he's going to give us. These seven, these seven centers may be enumerated as five if we eliminate the spleen and count the two head centers as one, coming together, you know, Vulcan and Venus, basically. Vulcan, the head center, Venus, the Ajna center, and their necessary marriage. There are different ways of counting, and he is open to these ways and says they are legitimate. The five centers thus specified are applicable to our fivefold evolution in this second solar system. So let's just say sacral. No. Sacral center is eliminated, and the two head centers given here in physical form are viewed as one. Let's see what the advantages might be of viewing these centers in different ways, bringing some together, eliminating others. In the first solar system, the first major solar system, the three lower centers were developed, and with them, the occultist has naught to do. Now, does he mean also the basis spine center? Because it seems the occultist has much to do at a certain point with the base of spine center, though not with the sacral center. So what is he including here? The solar plexus is also involved, but not the spleen. And maybe there are other centers that are minor that he's talking about. Let's see. They form the basis of the development of the lower quaternary before individualization. So let's say that some emotion, well, some emotion, some mentality, and definitely activity are thus developed, but are now transcended, and the divine fire must be focalized in other and higher centers. So we do not focalize the divine fire in the lower centers, but take energy from the lower centers to focalize in the higher centers. So there's no way we can discount these lower centers, because there comes a time when the sacral energy must move to the throat, and when the solar plexus energy must move to the heart, and when over maybe a few initiations, the base of spine center must move to the highest head center. So this not to do has the implication that we don't work with them so much as points of focalization. We in fact elevate their energies to the higher points of focalization above the diaphragm. We're familiar with this idea. The spleen. Now, he calls that the third center. And let's see. He goes in a way, the solar plexus is subdiaphragmatic, and maybe the spleen is a little bit lower than the solar plexus in terms of positioning, but anyway, it's mentioned as third. The order with which or through which Master DK presents tabulations are often, this order is often very revealing, and it must be studied. The spleen, the third center, interestingly associated with activity, which is the third aspect, has a specific purpose. Which is the third aspect of divinity, has a specific, all right, I didn't read that, but maybe long ago, you know. It has its correspondence in the third or activity aspect, and in the third or activity adaptability ray. I think we should remember that when we call this ray the ray of activity and the ray of higher mind and abstract thought, that the adaptability factor is another one of those names to change as is required. And rapidly so. It's one of those names we must keep in mind for this type of, for this third ray. because it will explain certain things that mere activity and abstract thought will not explain. I mean, when you see, I guess, all these third-rate types on the floor of the stock market, stock exchange, having to react instantly to constant fluctuations in the value of that which they are buying or selling, either for themselves or for clients, you see adaptability at work. So anyway, there is this correspondence in the third or activity aspect and in the third or let's call it adaptability ray, and is the basis of all the fundamental activities of the microcosm. We might say here the automaticisms. Is there such a word? Maybe automatisms is better. And of recurring adaptations of the microcosm to its environment, to its need, and to the macrocosm. Well, you know, very simply put, if you're a hunter and there's no game, you move on. If you're a gatherer of food, berries, and so forth, and for some reason they are not available, you move on, you change. You go to another place where what you need can be found. So, selectivity is a word connected very much with the third aspect. So, I'll put that down. Selectivity is a word connected with the third aspect of divinity. The selective processes, and even when we talk about who we gather for work, this selectivity is the paramount approach for the third-rate types. The second-rate types might slowly educate those who are gathered, and the first-rate type simply impresses the pattern upon them, regardless of who they are. Okay. It takes the vibratory force and energy of the macrocosm and transmutes it for the use of the microcosm. And here we have, we have transmutation associated with the third aspect of divinity. Transformation with the second. And transfiguration with the first. You can reverse that, of course, but first aspect of divinity. There is a glorification that occurs there, and the first real contact with the monad as a factor constantly to be considered is occurring at the transfiguration. So there's kind of a 3-2-1 in that sequence. And yet, you know, in a way we can consider it first, second, third initiation, the 1-2-3. You can usually take sequences of numbers and not just look at them in one way, you can reverse them. So anyway, this is the spleen. We are discussing the spleen. It's certainly an organ of vitality, and it processes the ambient vitality and turns it into energy at the disposal of the individual. We might call it the organ of transmutation, and as its functions are more completely understood, it will be found that it provides a magnetic link between the conscious thinking threefold man and his lower vehicles. The conscious thinking threefold man, who is that? The soul and incarnation, and his lower vehicles, regarding those lower vehicles as the not-self, and as themselves animated by informing entities. Who are they? The lunar lords. It is the life force contacting those entities that is the issue and the aim. So, let's just call it the organ of transmutation. The solar angels are particularly experts in the art and science of transmutation, and so must have much to do with the work of the spleen, as well as with the work of the permanent atoms. A magnetic link, it provides a magnetic link between the conscious thinking threefold man and his lower vehicles. Now, you know, more and more we consider higher and higher vehicles as the not-self. At first we think of them as the self, but then as abstraction proceeds, the fifth means, is it the pratyahara, the abstraction, we discover that the area in which we were rooted is also the not-self. The area with which we identified ourselves. We may identify ourselves as the egoic lotus in the Temple of Solomon, or the consciousness in the causal body, and basically that becomes an aspect of the not-self. Even at length, the vehicle of the monad, the Temple of Ezekiel, becomes the not-self. There being only one self in all the cosmos, and that is the being consciousness of the universal logos, which essentially we are. Well, we're a tiny little projection of that universal logos, but as we are abstracted back into its nature and drop our various limited self-perceptions, we discover that we are that great being. So that's the discussion of the spleen a little bit. Let's see, is there more? Right. So there is an emotional counterpart to the spleen, as there is to all of the etheric chakras, although because of some incompleteness in our development, there is not yet a mental counterpart to all of these etheric chakras and to the emotional chakras. Once we reach the third subplane, the second and the first, egoic lotus takes over those functions. In its emotional counterpart, it is the organ of emotional vitality. And we certainly do see the difference between people who are emotionally vital and responsive, maybe overly so at times, and those who do not seem, in earlier stages of evolution, even to be able to respond emotionally. They can respond etherically, but not with emotional vitality. That really hasn't been developed yet. So it's the organ of emotional vitality, again, in the same sense as providing a link. Now, on the mental plane, it serves somewhat the same purpose, only this time through this center are the thought forms vitalized by means of the energizing will. Okay, well, this is information that one would not want to do without, frankly. No, that's not a great color for that. Let's see. Now I have to stop highlighting and then change my color. Okay. And let's, you know, give a good yellow to the mental plane. And I find this very interesting. The vitalization of thought forms. Also something to be noted in the charts, and I'll show that to you in just a moment. Well, maybe the way to do that is to make sure here that we have the we'll have to have I'm moving my picture all over the place here, but maybe you don't see that. We'll take a look at these diagrams that Tuya created. Okay, I think this will do it. Yes, it will. So, what I'll do is make, right, there we go. And if you will notice that seven chakras exist on the etheric plane of the systemic etheric physical plane. Seven chakras exist, and these are major ones. Ajna center not shown, however, and there has to be a good reason for that, but the spleen is shown. And notice that when it comes to the vitalization of thought forms, there are certain chakras which are shown on the mental plane. They are the base of the spine. G-O, I think, stands for gonads, but we can deal with the sacral center there. And solar plexus, and there right next to it is the spleen. But the higher chakras, as I say, their function is taken over by the egoic lotus. So the spleen is found on all these three levels, fourth etheric, fourth astral etheric, and fourth, well, maybe we can call it mental etheric. Okay. So on the mental plane, the spleen, it serves somewhat the same purpose, vitalization. The organ of emotional vitality. And let's make that a little bigger. And on the mental plane, it serves the same purpose. The organ of lower mental vitality, energizing thought forms. Only this time, through this center, are the thought forms vitalized by the means of the energizing will. So somehow, you know, when we say to a child now, "You mind me," we are combining the will and the mind together. And so the will is reaching particularly into the level of the mind, the energizing will. I will not therefore deal more fully with this center beyond these general indications. Few people have the faculty of stimulating it through the use of the word. Now, that's what we're still talking about, stimulating centers through the use of the word, nor is it desirable, just because it could be done. It's not necessarily desirable in terms of the plan, because premature activation of certain powers can really create a chaotic situation. So it develops normally if the aspirant himself as a totality progresses as desired. And of course, you know, the masters have to keep their watch over the development of aspirants. They do look in from time to time, even in the earlier stages, and they do receive reports from those who more closely supervise the development of the aspirant. So if his physical body, and you know, now here we talk about what is progress as desired. And that would be if his physical body receives adequate application of the life forces of the sun. You know, this is where he has clothing designed especially to not cover the area between the shoulder blades so that the prana can enter the higher center in the pranic triangle, at least there. If his emotional body is moved by high desire and open to the downflow of force from the causal and intuitional levels, so let us remember that is what the astral body is supposed to carry, that type of force, causal and intuitional. And if his mental life is intense, vibrant, and animated by a powerful will, you know, in this case, what might we call it? The will to know. Then the spleen, with its lesser counterparts, inner counterparts rather, will progress and be in healthy condition. So this normal development and what is required for normal development is a definite, concrete issue. Adequate vitality of the etheric physical, high desire. Let's see now. I think what I'll do is sort of have these emerge a little. Moved by high desire, that's another one. Okay, and That's another one, moved by high desire. And mental body, intense, vibrant, and animated by the questing will, the will to know, using the mental body. I would say that we have people on the fifth ray who are very much like that. And they will not rest until the discovery is made. I mean, just, well, it's just so common among the great researchers. And I keep on thinking about Edison, you know, who had this powerful Aquarius and fifth ray, and also a powerful Capricorn for endurance. And he was relentless in his pursuit of that which, what can I say, inwardly he knew these things existed and could be done. So we will therefore thus dispose of it and give no further space to it in these letters. Now, he has something here about the three fundamental centers. Okay, so basically, since it's after 3 a.m. here, I'm going to actually try to be a little wise instead of my usual approach. Say, okay, we have a place that we can stop. And we'll talk about the three fundamental centers, hopefully tomorrow, which is today. And we've reached page, this is really a different, we've reached page 73. He's really offering us here a different perspective on the centers from the ones that are usually established. So we'll have to see why that may be. So we went as far as page 73. And now we will just get ourselves ready for program number 20. I find myself learning so very much when I study this book. It is a foundational book, but not at all an easy book. It's filled with so many technicalities that are foundational, necessary. So we finished here with program 19 and page 72. Uh-huh. 73. And today is the 11th of August, at least at this time it is. And we'll begin with program 20. And we'll take it from 73 onward. And I'm assuming that we will work tomorrow somehow here. So, thus much for the moment, and we'll be working with the three fundamental centers. And as I kind of stand back, I notice, again, sacral center is missing, and the heart center, which is super diaphragmatic, is present. So, okay, Let's see what his explanation of that may be. All right, everybody, good night, and many blessings, lots of love from all of us on the communications team, sending this forth over the radio, as they say. Okay, over the radio. And we'll see you soon, if you've made it this far in the book. You know, probably there are going to be, I don't know, maybe in over 100 programs, I guess, on this book, because it is technically so demanding. So we'll see you soon, and bye for now.